Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
I mean, what's that football focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football. I like football season, all the things that go with it.
All right, welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Sam Monson here with Mike Renner. Mike,
back.
Throwback.
Three straight pods now.
Yeah.
Come on.
You usurped our position initially when we got banned from the office for COVID scares.
I was going to say, who had odds on Steve being the first person on the reserve COVID list? I was the favorite.
You
for
were.
Sure on
and
that.
Honestly, I think you're still the favorite.
But I was going to say, I think like I already got it. So that
right.
Puts me behind.
You just never got tested. That's that's the key to this. Is if you never get tested, nobody ever knows. So yeah, some minor COVID scares. I've got a clean test that gets me back in the building. Steve, we're waiting on. He'll be back soon. So until then, it's you and me, Mike. We got week one of NFL football in the action.
Oh, I know.
Or in the books. It felt good. It felt like normal again. Like, here's NFL Sunday football, and it went off kind of without a hitch.
I'm just so excited about the amount of All-22 that was just put out into the ether, because we were watching the same shit for just months on end. And it's just like, there's only so much you can do with that. And now we have, you know, 14 new games now, because we're recording this Monday morning, but about to be 16 new games of All-22. And it's just like, there's something else to talk about.
That's the thing. To me, it's like the last few weeks of like, all right, what am I writing about? What am I talking about this week? And now it's like, there's actual things to talk about. Things that happened on Sunday, and we can overreact to all of it.
How many ways can we rank the same guys?
God. Yeah. So now there's actual stuff. The other thing is, so only one stadium had a crowd in it of any description, right? Jacksonville, and they were what, 20% capacity?
Swung the game for them,
right? But it didn't seem weird. Like a lot of sports through this whole crowdless fake noise stuff, it's felt very rough and forced and contrived. But the NFL actually seemed to work. Like even the fake crowd stuff, they actually dialed up booing for like a give up run before the half, before a field goal attempt. Like it worked. It was pretty good.
Wait, so they're dialing that up on the broadcast. So that's not in the stadium.
Yeah, yeah.
They're not playing booing.
But in the stadium, they've got some kind of like 70 decibel ambient background noise.
White noise. Just
I think it's, I don't know if it's crowd like noise or just like white noise, but there's some like baseline level of sound.
That I wonder how that's. Feels. We should get media passes for a Bengals game and just check it out.
There was, I think it was the 49ers. No, what was it? It was the Ravens Browns game where at one point, I don't know if it was because the ref was close enough to the huddle at that point, but you like heard the play call like start to finish.
Yeah.
I don't know how much defenses are hearing, but it's probably quite a lot. Like they're getting a lot from those games. Teams are going to have to like change a lot over the course of the season, I think, because of what they can hear.
Yeah, I will say it was at no point was I like, oh, there's no fans. And it didn't really, like I said, in the NBA, watching those games, you're in like this ridiculous looking stadium. You can tell it almost looks like a practice. The NFL, it just didn't feel any different.
And in soccer with the fake crowd noise, like the reaction stuff is terrible. Like it just doesn't work.
Well, because soccer just either blows up or it's nothing.
Yeah, yeah. Like, so they, the like, you know, it's always late or it's just off and it just sounds wrong. Whereas the NFL actually seemed to get it to work quite well. All right, let's get into the biggest takeaways from this week. The first and most obvious, I think, the Breeze-Brady showdown.
Did not live up to that.
No. This was like the game of the week on paper. It was Breeze-Brady. It was two of the greatest of all time. It was what we expect to be two of the Super Bowl contenders from the NFC. And honestly, it looked like two 40-odd-year-old men just slugging it out to the death.
Yeah, it was getting hyped up as it was going to be that Chiefs-Rams game from years ago, where it's just like back and forth. Oh my God, what just happened? But I think that didn't give enough credence to how good these defenses are.
Yeah.
Like, that's why these two teams have got so hyped up all offseason, because the Saints have a ridiculously good defense. Like, I'm not going to say Brady's washed. You might be saying Brady's washed. I'm not going to say Brady's washed because, I mean, you're 6 years late. But I do think that the Saints defense, every single level, and the fact that then they add Janoris Jenkins and Malcolm Jenkins, who make pick six for Janoris Jenkins and pass breakup for Malcolm Jenkins, like, those guys made real impact week one. I think it was just doing a disservice to them to be hyping it up as this offensive matchup when both these defenses are very good. And I was pretty impressed with the Bucs defense as well. They obviously made some mistakes, but I think they limited Breeze and pretty much put a cap on that Saints offense.
And we've been talking about the Bucs defense for a while in terms of, look, Brady and Gronk, that's where all the ink's going. But like the end of the season for the Bucs, that defense was cooking. And honestly, that might be the thing that determines how good this team can be. And it was certainly like
going to be like Manning, 15 Manning,
right.
When he won the Super Bowl. Brady's going to be limping into the playoffs, and then the defense just carries him all the way through.
Let's talk about the two quarterbacks, right? Because I think Breeze is closer to that Manning season than Brady, judging by this evidence alone.
Yeah, so Breeze's arm looks far more cooked. Like, he 5.2 average depth of target in that game. Now they were up for a good
portion of the game. And there was one, like, he actually pulled out a deep shot in there. Like, there was one deep pass out there, almost just to prove that he could still do it. But beyond that, there was almost nothing.
Yeah, and they don't have great personnel to really be attacking down the football field. You know, Emmanuel Sanders is probably their best deep threat, but he's well beyond his prime at this point. So it's going to be an underneath offense. That's going to be where they win. But I do think, you know, he's run that offense for forever. Brady's problem was more, it's just the offense didn't mesh with what he likes to do quite out the gate. It just didn't seem like.
I was thinking during the game, Breeze is kind of fascinating at this point, because he's almost like you're the person to talk to about this, right? Because you're the draft guy, and every year there's this friction between how good a player is and how viable his physical tools are for the NFL, right? And it's if you don't have sort of, forget prototype, but if you don't even have like viable NFL tools in terms of arm strength and the ability to get it where you want to go, you have to be so good at the mental processing part and understanding where it needs to go and how quickly it needs to get there, because you don't have the arm to fire it into a closing window if you're a tick late on it. And I think that it turns out that's obviously a really important part of that evaluation process. But Breeze is almost this like perfect case study in this now, because like that arm looks awful, and yet he's still, you know, top 1, 2, 3 quarterbacks in the NFL in terms of understanding and processing and knowing where the ball's got to go. He just can't get it where it needs to go all the time anymore.
Yeah, that's things like, you can succeed with a middling arm. You just have to be, your margin for error is so razor thin. I think that's almost why we see him down the stretch each of the last two seasons fall apart, is when you have to face that real defense and they make you do more than just dink and dunk underneath. Because when, you know, you're playing in bad weather late in the season or whatever, you're playing against a defense that's just not going to give you anything down the field with, you know, that he's going to be able to fit it in with how strong his arm is. All of a sudden, you have to put together drives. Every time you score, if you're the Saints, it has to be 12 plays. You're not getting these chunk plays. And I think your offense can go in the tank pretty quickly when that's your only real recourse. So, yeah, I'd be worried if I were both these teams about what I saw offensively.
We did the Joe Montana versus Steve Young podcast special in the offseason. One of the things coming out of that was just how insane Bill Walsh was, in terms of he did not give a crap about the standard way that you deal with quarterbacks. He was just going to put the best guy out in the field regardless of who it was. And if that meant benching Joe Montana at any point, that's what was going to happen. Now, he had Steve Young waiting in the wing, so it's easier to do that. But he did that before to get Joe Montana on the field as well. Well, what I'm saying is, do you see any scenario whereby at any point this season, Drew Brees becomes enough of a problem where they make a switch at quarterback.
I know you're probably suggesting Jameis Winston, but
I'm suggesting
Sean Payton
nothing.
Would probably put Taysom right. Hill in before Jameis Winston at this point.
Well, Taysom Hill is their deep threat right now.
But I was going to say, I think you could see, I'm not going to say make a change, but I think that Taysom Hill package or whatever could become a more regular occurrence in the offense. Just that something that, you know, wants to drive, he's getting tossed in there just as a switch up, just because, yeah, like I said, you're not going to have explosive plays otherwise, and I think he could be your guy to try to generate those sort of explosive plays.
So that's the thing. It used to be a vehicle to just get Taysom Hill on the field because he's a fun playmaker and he brings something different. Now it's actually like an important part of, if he's not on the field, there's almost no deep threat. There's nothing to scare a team deep down the field. Now when Taysom Hill's on, at least you have to think about the deep pass. Like, there might actually be more value to him this year than there was, because it's serving a purpose beyond just...
They paid him over $10 million a year. So.
That's true.
And he only played 17 snaps.
But if they roll into December and they're, let's say, they're still contending, but they haven't blown everybody away the way everybody expected them to, they're sort of, they're on track for like a, you know, 11-win season. Maybe they're maybe still atop the division because the division is less of a runaway train than we thought, in terms of the Bucks maybe struggling as well. So 11 wins, they're jockeying for seeding, jockeying to stay in front of the division, but Brees has looked like this the entire way, and it's only getting harder from this point out because you're playing the best teams, you're going to roll into the playoffs where there are some legit teams. I mean, you've got to start thinking about...
You're going to have to go to Green Bay, probably.
You've got to start thinking about, like, does one of these other quarterbacks actually give you a better chance of winning the game because they can scare teams deep?
They might. I mean, like, they very well may. I don't think there's a chance in hell that he's going to bench Drew Brees, though.
Yeah.
I just, like, I don't foresee him being of the Bill Walsh
even. So here's
mindset.
The thing, right? Even if Bill Walsh wouldn't have benched him, I think he would have been all on board with the idea of, like, all right, we're going to have a between the 20s quarterback and we're going to have a red zone quarterback. So, like, Taysom Hill or Jameis is going to run between the 20s, and then Brees is going to come in for the red zone where he doesn't have to fire it, you know, 40 yards downfield.
I was going to say, I could see a situation where they're down, like, 20 in, like, the end of the third quarter of the game, and they're just like, you know, Brees is not going to be able to take us back from this.
And that's where you open the door.
And that's when Jameis comes in, maybe, like, week 16 or something. Yeah. Something like that. I could see that situation. God. But that's about it.
This is like classic week one overreaction.
Yeah, right.
Next week he's going to light up.
Cooked.
Yeah, next week he's going to set the world on fire and look like vintage Drew Brees.
And I think some of that, like him just really dinking nothing, was they're winning football game. Like,
yeah.
It's a tough defense. You're winning the football game. He's not going to take any risk with a football that could.
There's a great.
Like Brady throwing that pick six.
There was one great play, though, that I think highlighted. So the deep ball is one thing, right? But there was. It was like a quick out at one point where the receiver did exactly what he was supposed to. I forget the yardage, but he ran, you know, 2 yards past the line to gain, starts working his way back towards the quarterback to catch the out, but the ball is so underthrown that he has to come not just to the line, all the way back, and it ends up falling like a yard short of the conversion. Like, Brees just doesn't have that anymore. Like, he can't get it all the way out where it needs to go. That ball was 2-3 yards underthrown on a far hash deep out, and that's the NFL benchmark throw. That's the one where when they pull it out in college, you're like, see, he's got NFL throws. Like, I don't know that Brees does anymore, and at some point that's a problem. Like, he's so good that most of the time it isn't, but every now and again.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely is a problem, and like I said, it just limits what you can do offensively. And a smart defense coordinator, like, there's the reason why they had problems with Mike Zimmer, because I think he knows how to take advantage of that and scheme around those limitations to where, you know, you stack and just play on that underneath stuff and take that away, and you're going to be out. If you can take that underneath stuff away, you're going to stop Saints.
The good news is, though, that, you know, they still won. And
that's what I like. They're going to win games.
34 points.
This is a very good, just well-built football team from top to bottom, offensively, defensively. There's not a lot of weaknesses.
So let's go to the Tom Brady side of this, right? Now, obviously, I have some previous in terms of Tom Brady being washed, but I think this is more of an example of Tom Brady and the Bruce Arians meeting of the minds thing has not yet gone in sync than Tom Brady is just done.
Yeah.
Now, like, he missed some throws. There were some ugly plays in there. But he made some pretty good throws as well. Like, this was more of a he's got the arm to make all the throws. Maybe sometimes he's got to force it more than he used to, and that's where the accuracy goes a little bit awry. But this was way more of a, like, this offense is not in sync yet.
That's what it felt like to me. And one, you're going up against good defense.
Yeah.
And two, it just, the pick, you know, pick to Evans, route miscommunication, not on the same page. There's a good deal of that, it seemed like, just within that offense. You saw him get to the top of his drop and just sit, I think, more than you had in any point in time in New England. Even when he didn't have receivers that could get open, that ball was getting out of his hands quickly. And that's one, that's part of Bruce Arians' offense. Like, it's going to be a deep passing offense. He's going to have deeper dropbacks, that sort of thing. But two, I just think the timing aspect is what made Tom Brady Tom Brady in New England. He was hitting a route. Even if there wasn't a lot of separation, he was hitting at the exact perfect time. You didn't see that in this game. That wasn't where he was, you know, getting the ball. The timing was just off. So I think there's hope in time that I can turn around. I'm not going to, like, I'm not writing him off by any means, but I will say they didn't look too much different from the guy we saw last year. And the guy we saw last year wasn't great either. Now, people were blaming the talent around him. Maybe that just, you know, some things go when you're 43 years old.
Yeah, that's the interesting question to me, right? Is, so I agree with you. I think it was a lot of this offense didn't look in sync. The Mike Evans one was interesting because that happened a ton last year with Jameis. And everyone was kind of like, well, it's Jameis, right? Because he's always been volatile. Yeah. He's always had these mistakes. But there was a lot of just receiver and quarterback not being on the same page. And it was always tough to determine exactly who was hanging who out to dry. The fact that it happened again with one of the best sort of mentally processing quarterbacks of all time is concerning in terms of this offense. The other thing that's interesting is this offense has traditionally caused problems for the quarterback in year one, the Bruce Arians system, right? Year two or beyond is where you get like the Carson Palmer 2015 season where suddenly like they click and it's insane. But Brady's like ancient.
Is he gonna have a year two at all? Yeah.
At which point, why are you even trying to force him into this offense? I mean, I was saying last night that I'm surprised they didn't do what the Broncos did with Peyton Manning, which is say, after like a couple of weeks of trying to force the square peg into the round hole, just say, okay, Peyton, tell us what the offense is we're running.
That is kind of another thing to remember, is that Peyton Manning, everyone remembers, what was it, 14? That was a monster year where he broke all the passing records. That was the second year in the system. He started off 13. It was not great. Like, he started off with his first few games in Denver weren't lights out. So
the first few were a disaster. Yeah. And he had to, like, they junked the offense, and he had to, like, rewire the way he was playing the game because he couldn't make the throws he used to anymore. Mm-hmm. But the point is, it was the same thing
Adam
in terms
also
of
also offense coordinator. So.
Right. But very quickly, they basically went, okay, this is not going to work. Yeah. You have run the same thing for like 15 years. Tell us what it is.
Yeah.
And that's what we'll run.
Again, no need to reinvent the wheel, basically.
Right. I'm wondering, like, A, why wasn't that the first thing they did with Brady? And B, is that something that can change? Or is this just Bruce Arians, this is what I run?
And it's not going to change. You think Bruce Arians going to scrap his offense for Tom Brady? Like, that's a proud man. There's no, it's going to be his offense. It's going to be what he's done his entire career because, I mean, that's just who Bruce Arians is. He's not going to cede any ground to anybody.
That's the concern to me, though, because, again, this is overreaction week one time. For all we know, week two and three, they click and it looks great. But if this goes the way that the Peyton Manning first season in Denver did, like, one of the biggest keys was they junked that offense and basically just said, Peyton, tell us what the offense is now.
Yeah.
If the Bucs don't do that for Tom Brady, you might be throwing away the shot you have of winning the Super Bowl because you didn't essentially ask Brady what fits.
And I will say he still targeted Scott Miller five times. He still went back to the well of his slop white guy, but yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking, is Scotty Miller's another one of these guys that like looks like he should be a Wes Welker, Julian Edelman style, Danny Amendola receiver, but isn't, right? He's something completely different stylistically. He's this vertical speedster who just happens to have the same look.
You can say it. He's all white.
Is Andy Isabella Scotty Miller?
Scotty Miller's Andy Isabella. What do you?
Well, whatever.
No.
Andy Isabella can't get his
Andy
ass
Isabella
on the field
was not
yet.
A slot. Yeah, they were not like pure slots.
Right.
Underneath.
But we were trying to like we were trying to sort of figure out who Andy Isabella is from an NFL player matchups standpoint. He might be Scotty Miller in terms of being.
Yeah, I think that's their
vertical fair. Slot weapon. Maybe if he's a slot weapon, he's a vertical deep threat guy only. And maybe Scotty Miller as well in terms of, you know, probably not going to be a massive feature of the offense.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to see what Tyler Johnson does when he gets back healthy, though.
That will be
he's definitely more of a pure slot.
Well, he's the guy that might not fit at all in the offense unless it changes towards something that Bruce Arians doesn't want to run.
Yeah.
So overall, we're concerned about Drew Brees, but probably not about the Saints overall because they're just too good,
Yeah.
We're not as concerned about Tom Brady, but maybe more concerned about the Bucs overall because this thing needs to mesh. Otherwise, it's not going.
And also, I don't love their offensive line still. Like Tristan Wirfs looked very good for a rookie, but like Donovan Smith,
bad. Yeah.
And then you have one injury along that offensive line, they're going to be on their knees because that's a very – they're just so thin. You have no backups worth a damn.
What did you think of the return of Gronk?
He looked like the Gronk we saw – 2 years ago, like there was
so it was funny. He's like
the rehabilitation was overblown. He's still stiff as shit.
He's noticeably slimmed down, and yet it's made zero difference whatsoever to like how fast he moves.
Yeah,
there was one point where he got a pass, got some space, and like just the speed at which his strides move. It's just the word lumbering was made for that. Like just this slow.
He always
plodding.
Was, but he
like, right, but it kind of worked because it seemed like he was. Somehow it was moving him quickly, or at least because he's so big.
Strides,
right. Now it doesn't seem to actually be moving him fast, so it just looks comical.
Yeah, that is kind of funny that we spent so much, there's so much all this hoopla around it, and that's not gonna make a difference to them whatsoever, it seems like.
Yeah, a year out wrestling has not rejuvenated his body and turned him back into vintage Gronk, at least so far. All right, where are we moving to next? Joe Burrow.
Joe Burrow. Hometown. That one hurt.
Yeah.
That was – so now everyone was kind of like crowning him because that was a very nice two-minute drill. He didn't play great throughout the rest of the game.
And just before the two-minute drill, he had like one of the worst plays
that
he had all week.
Like that was the most boneheaded interception I probably saw. Like he just flipped it to a D lineman. Like that was not LSU. The comfort level that we saw at LSU was not even close. And with good reason.
Right.
You're playing behind a Bengals offensive line. I wouldn't be comfortable either. But I do think that there were signs of encouragement. That two-minute drill was awesome. But pumping the brakes on. I was excited. I thought he'd be a top 10 QB. That was not close to top 10 QB play.
So you've actually backed off your...
You played another team. You played the Chargers defense. Very difficult defense to go against. Like one of the best secondaries, even without Derwin James. So... pumping the brakes on either direction in that take.
Okay, so you just that game hasn't
status quo.
Yeah, all right.
So he's still top 10. He's gotta finish top 10.
So I know there were bad things in there, right? And that was a horrific interception. But I was kind of encouraged, to do what he did in the face of that offensive line, and when the chips were down, to execute that kind of 2 minute drive, and I deserved the. The touchdown. Like I know AJ Green did push off,
but
the throw and the catch were sick.
Yeah,
like it was.
It was a big day for OPI yesterday.
Right, he extended. It was a push off. It's the right call, but like Joe Burrow put that ball exactly where it needed to go, and AJ Green full extension toe taps gets him in like that. That nice. Deserved the score to come back.
And just the way he, 2 minute drill. You see guys like Kirk Cousins blow that and like. Fuck up the clock management and not be in control. He was getting to the line every single time. Wasn't spiking like you would think a young quarterback would go up and spike on a first down. Every time they get a first down, he wasn't. He had plays ready. Basically ran that about as perfectly as they could have. I thought they should have gone for one more chance though. 7 seconds, just throw a fade. Like throw any quick play is not going
to
take 7 seconds.
It's enough time to get to take a shot before the kick. But I think there's something to that poise, like. I don't think you do that unless.
See, but like I'm not surprised by it is the other thing.
Yeah,
like that's who we knew that he had that. So I'm not.
It's good to see. It's good to like reinforce it at the NFL level. That's still there because it isn't always Like, there are guys who can do that in the college level where suddenly when the defenses are good and your offensive line isn't and the game's moving quicker, it's that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. I think it was good to see him do that. I'm sort of snake bitten about all of these like reaction week one things, you know, particularly the Baker Mayfield thing has ruined me, right? Like year one of Baker, and not just year one of Baker, but like day one, you know, when he came in, rescued the game against the Jets, and you're like, it just looks different. Baker versus Tyrod Taylor, it's a different team. And then the rookie records, and now Baker's like in the tank. We'll come to that later. But I'm just, before that, I would be like, Joe Burrow has it, right? You look at him, and it's just different to Andy Dalton being out there or any other random, you know, middling level quarterback. He has that it factor, the ability to be a franchise guy. But now I can't go there anymore.
Yeah, you're not going to declare him.
No.
I still think, I mean, you lean on what we've seen before. He was so good at LSU and what we saw. And wasn't helped out by John Ross being John Ross once again. Man, how does he just blow something every game? Just like wide receivers aren't supposed to have big fuck ups.
That's like, such a small thing as well. Like all you needed to do was catch it cleanly.
Yeah.
You did the, you, like the
and a false start.
You got your feet in, perfect sideline work, and you had to double catch it. Like
some, he's just not going to change. That's who he's been his entire career. It's so weird.
I don't understand.
No.
I don't understand how you can still do that. It's just
year four.
At the worst possible time as well. Any other time in the game, that's fine.
And I thought he should have had that deep ball in the back of the end zone. I don't know if you saw that one early in the game. He kind of like pulled up and then reached. And then like if he would have just ran through and tapped his toes, I thought he could have had it in the back of the end zone. I don't know. Just John Ross is not going to be – it's not going to change anytime soon.
Just quickly, what do you make of the Chargers? Because this, for them, like they got away with it. But this
– like. They kind of are who I thought they were going to be, which is disaster offensively. Defensively, just low-scoring games every single time. And that's not – to me, that's not a replicatable, successful pat. Like, that's not going to work for 16 games, I don't think.
If you're going to have – like that. If you're going to have Tyrod Taylor as your quarterback, I think you need to lean into it with a Baltimore-style offense.
Yeah.
Like, they want to sort of pull at the fringes of that, and, like, every now and again, they'll break out a little – funky option look that almost needs to be like your base. That needs to be like your default.
Yeah, I'm surprised it didn't. I mean, Anthony Lynn was with him in Buffalo. It didn't look anything right. Like what Buffalo was running.
Yeah, I was kind of bullish on this.
Like that was Roman though, who had that offense. So.
That's the thing. I was kind of bullish on this because they were doing some funky stuff with Tyrod Taylor back in like 2015 when Anthony Lynn was there, when Greg Roman was there as well, and. You thought, okay, if you're going to be so adamant that Tyrod Taylor's your quarterback and we like what he can do, you're going to be coming up with some cool stuff. That's like, where was it?
Yeah, I mean, five design runs on the day is not, right. It's not a lot. Like even, Cam Newton had 13, so they leaned into it a little more.
Yeah, it can't be something that you just pull out as like, you know, here's a little gimmick, haha. Like that should be the thing that you're using to offset the fact that you have Tyrod Taylor at quarterback and not like a real one.
I wonder if they just designed the offense more around Herbert and are just like, here, Tyrod, here's a few games until Herbert shows he's not a complete disaster.
I mean, I guess that's possible, but it seems that if that was the case, you would be sort of less effusive in your praise of Tyrod Taylor all the way through the offseason. He's our guy. We like what he can do.
I mean, like, you remember the Browns.
I know. Yeah, that's kind of what
we've seen this story before.
Yeah, but it just seems, I don't know. I was disappointed by the lack of creativity in that offense.
Yes. No, I completely agree.
All right, let's move on to one of the most interesting things from this weekend. The Aaron Rodgers revenge tour got off to a flying start. That looked absurd.
So obviously, full disclosure, I'm a Packers fan. grew up in Milwaukee. That was 2011. That's just like how he looked out there playing was how he looked in 2011.
Right.
In terms of just hits his back foot, it's coming out. No real hesitation. When it is like a second chance play, he's finding somebody. Him being able to use the hard count on the road is one of the most underrated,
every game now.
Yeah. Underrated like additions that any team gets. Like they're a completely different team home versus road in the Rodgers era, and they're going to have that on the road now against everyone. That's going to be a massive, that's three or four plays. It's like a few plays a game that they're just on a different level, and they already have a very good pass blocking offensive line to be able to use that hard count. I think that offense could be scary if we see that more. Now they're going up against the Vikings secondary, which admittedly pretty rough.
Yeah.
But you'd still think Mike Zimmer would be able to throw enough at him to either confuse him or something to slow down that offense, and there was nothing. It's just basically anytime the Vikings made any noise, Rodgers just buried them.
The grades aren't finalized yet, but I think Rodgers is going to be comfortably the best graded quarterback
yeah.
the weekend. Like right now, his grade is hovering at 95. He might be the only quarterback above 90.
Yeah.
Actually, overall, I didn't think this was a great week for quarterback play. I thought there were a couple of guys that looked really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally the standard was not phenomenal, but Rodgers looked absurd. And what was amazing is there was a whole bunch of those plays where like the coverage was pretty good for a lot of these plays. I know like one of the amazing things was, you know, almost 400 yards. His average time to throw was under 2.3 seconds. So
yeah,
now,
that's what I'm saying. He's just hitting it and going.
That does fold in some of the like quick tap pass stuff, but it also factors in like where he decided to run out of the pocket randomly and like then fired a bullet to Devontae Adams on the side of the end zone. Like there's give and take in that, but the fact that he was able to just look up, see single coverage, fire it in, and put the ball exactly where it needed to be against tight coverage consistently.
Yeah, and it's not just in Minnesota where they're good is in their safeties.
Yeah.
And he was attacking over 25% of his attempts were deep attempts on the day, 11 deep attempts. He was going down the football field just like no fear in him. It was, like I said, it was 2011 Rodgers. That's what it looked like. And I was kind of, when he said he went back and watched and figured out some stuff about what he was doing back then, I was like, okay, yeah, sure. Why didn't you do that fucking 3 years ago? What are you like? Who's gonna figure that out over one offseason? But that was, I mean, probably haven't seen him look quite like that in a game since 2016.
Right.
Probably like the year where he went down the stretch, the relax or whatever. That was probably the last time he's looked anything close to that in a game.
The only thing that was interesting though is that. So it didn't, all that talk about it, I went back, I saw some things on tape and I, you know, changed my game, right?
Yeah.
He still hasn't adjusted to the things that were always like the biggest concern with Rodgers, which is he doesn't really attack the middle intermediate
yeah.
level, like that box in the middle where most quarterbacks live.
Well,
Rodgers just doesn't want to put it there ever. And even in this game, he still didn't really put the ball in that space. Like
no.
This was back to being the sort of peak of what Rodgers does best, which mm-hmm. is attack deep, attack sidelines, you know, all the things that he's always done stylistically. This was like back to being as good as he can get at that. But he still hasn't adjusted, like, he still hasn't made the sort of the easiest, if you like, fundamental switch, which is just target like the area that you never put the ball in.
That's not, though, just the way he throws, because he throws such lasers. Like, he never throws a touch, it seems like. He doesn't take anything off the ball. Like, he doesn't
yeah.
flick it over the top of like a linebacker. So he throws such lasers, like the linebackers come into play when he's in attacking that area of the field because he puts no arc on it. So I understand why he doesn't attack that area of the field much. He did have one seam route to like Lazard, but that was a little deeper. That was probably more like 25, 30 yards outfield.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I was interested though that the Vikings sort of cornerbacks, I thought Dantzler actually was doing okay for a reasonable period.
So he started over or played over.
Yeah.
What's his face? Gosh, the first
round. Jeff Gladney.
Yeah, which
right.
is crazy to me. Like,
and that
the fact that he's willing to, Zimmer was willing to do that, it's not great news for, either it's very good news for Dantzler or not great news for Gladney.
I mean, I think it's both because that happened quite early in training camp.
Yeah.
Like Dantzler was making some big plays against Adam Thielen. Very quickly, they seemed to make that switch that he was the guy that was going to get the start. I mean, it's obviously not good news when your first round rookie is not even starting.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's both. The fact that the other cornerbacks are getting lit up as well, I think like there's going to be time for like Gladney's going to get an opportunity this season
yeah.
because Mike Hughes and Holton Hill, like those guys are not nailing down a starting spot for any period of time.
And they're slow then. Like if you have Holton Hill, Mike Hughes, and you saw it, Marcus Valdes-Scantling like got open because
yeah.
they had no one that could match his speed. I'm surprised they didn't, you know, recognize that and be like, oh, well, let's just throw Gladney on him because Marcus Valdes-Scantling, not the most nuanced route runner, but he does run a 4.37. And so if you can't run a 4.37 and he's going vertical on you and you don't get hands on him, it's going to happen like what Dantzler did on that touchdown. So,
yeah. Dantzler's, I don't know how fast he is. Like, I don't think, you know what I mean? Like, he ran the 4.6 or whatever it was at the combine,
yeah.
then claimed a 4.2 at his pro day.
I thought he was like a 4 or 5 flat guy.
You think 4 or 5 flat?
It's like if I were to put his speed in a.
I honestly might just split the difference and say he's in the 4.4 somewhere.
Okay.
I think that Because even in the Marquez Valdes-Scantling thing, I don't think he lost for speed. I think he just lost the hand fighting battle at the, like, at the time the ball arrived, he was closing on him.
Yeah.
Like, he was making ground back up. And honestly, he got back into position the same way that Justin Reed did, you know, against the Chiefs on Thursday night, where he got back on that and then broke it up. Like, Dancer got to exactly the same position and just didn't hit the ball when he got his arm in there. Like, so I think he's got the speed to hang. I think he can play outside, and like, he might be the most optimistic or the most positive outlook of all those corners. But generally for the Vikings, this idea of we're going to roll into the season with zero proven cornerbacks, either rookies or young guys or, you know, unheralded guys, it's not working out yet.
This is why we say, hey, secondary is probably your most important position on the football field, is because they can just get torched even if your D-line front seven's fantastic. And by all accounts, you know, their D-line is pretty good. And they're actually, they didn't have Daniel Hunter in this one. So not in this one, but when he's healthy, it should be good. But they're going to be a good litmus test for what actually matters.
And last year, they made up for the cornerback stuff a lot with the safeties. But when the safeties are getting targeted and picked apart as well, it's just game over. Like, Anthony Harris, I think, is going to have the lowest grade we've ever given him out of this game.
Yeah, he bit on that one seam route. That was
so he didn't have a good game. If he's not, like, if the safeties aren't able to pick up the slack for what the corners are doing and the corners are getting toasted, I don't know how you're going to win games consistently that way.
Yeah, I'm not going to overreact, but I just thought going into the season, the Vikings were going to be it was just going to be ugly in that secondary.
Right. So how is this going to be Aaron Rodgers this year? Are we getting the 2011? Are we getting that guy back? Is he going to stick it to all the analytics people who've been writing his eulogy for the last couple of years?
Man, I would love to say yes, but it's been too long. But there, I mean, like, he is an oddly motivated human being in terms of, like, what drives him to be great. And you can't, like, just what's going to, you know, his sort of so razor thin the margins in terms of, like, when he was playing like crap for like the last couple years in terms of like how he was playing the game, it's not that big of a change. Like, the arm never left in terms of the accuracy when
physical,
like, he's
tools
in the pocket,
always
he's,
been
like,
there.
He's always had that, so there was always the capability. And if he's hit, if, like I said, if his average time to throw over the course of the season is 2.3 seconds, I think he wins the MVP, just because that means that he is finding guys and getting it out of his hand.
Talking.
But that's if his average time to throw is that long. He's not, dancing in the pocket. Like,
you know what he is? So he's motivated by the exact same things that motivate pretty much all those great quarterbacks, right? Like spite and revenge.
Yeah.
But he's not as good. So you watch The Last Dance, right?
Yeah.
I mean, no matter how benign and the random small thing, Michael Jordan is like, I took that personally and went out there, decided to ruin the guy's life. He's exactly like Michael Jordan. He's just less good at being actually irritated by those things.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, he needs to find, like, it takes them actually drafting his replacement to be like, all right, now I'm going to come back and screw you.
Yeah.
Like, just the constant barbs, the way that every one of those would be the thing that motivates Michael Jordan to screw somebody and ruin their life. Like, Aaron Rodgers, all those washed over him. It took them actually, like, drafting his replacement and not giving him any receiving help to be like, all right, now it's on.
I honestly think there is some of that, though.
Yeah.
I think he was remotivated by them drafting a quarterback. And I think you're going to see it. I think this is going to be his best year, at least since 16.
Right. I mean, it's like, I'm joking for the sort of the comic effect of the analogy, but I honestly think there's something to that, right? Like, Tom Brady, 12 years into it, is crying at the idea of six guys taken ahead of him or whatever it is. Like, Rodgers doesn't have that. Like, he doesn't have the ability to be so hurt by every tiny slight. But I think the exact same thing motivates him in terms of, once he finally feels that he's been shafted, he's going to come back and, like, ruin you. But he just isn't as good at as Brady.
Yeah, the small
Jordan.
Stuff, he's just like, whatever, who is that?
Right.
Who
cares? Like, what makes them great is the ability to find those tiny things and turn that into, like, a slight on your family's honor and come back and destroy you.
But Rodgers takes, like, the big things. Like, hey, I didn't get an offer out of high school.
Yeah.
Hey, I didn't get drafted first overall when I was the best quarterback.
Yeah, like,
and now, hey, you drafted my replacement when I'm still got it. I'll show you.
He's got, like, a far more normal way of, like, interpreting those things. Like, the three legitimate big slights in his career since he was a kid have, like, motivated him to be one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, whereas Michael Jordan and Tom Brady, like, one offhand comment causes them
headline,
keeps them stoked for like another 18 months or whatever it is. So I'm kind of with you. I think that's, we might see like a legit revenge tour from Rodgers. I agree that, like, the small things that idea of like being able to use the hard count for however long the no crowd thing works is huge. He is the best in the NFL at that, that cadence, the ability to make a guy jump off, you know, the hot, get a guy to jump. Like he's been doing that for years. And when he does it, he gets the free play, you know, gets the free shot at a touchdown, and he's good at it.
And they, what, they had one of those at least in that one, the Valdez scaling the seam route.
Right.
That was, yeah, I mean, if you get just one of those a game that you weren't going to have otherwise, is going to change a lot of games.
The obvious note of caution is, you know, he did this against this Vikings defense that has no corners. And
without Danielle Hunter.
Right. And they've been struggling the past couple of games against Rodgers. Like, this is a good opposition to be starting this comeback tour against. Yeah. Now, let's see how he does against a few more teams.
I also have to beat my chest a little bit. They started Elkton Jenkins at right tackle when I said that that was their best option at right tackle. Now they moved him after someone got hurt, and he ended up at left guard, but he did really well left right tackle. So
this is a good space to, you know, back up your priors. I like that. Victory laps.
Yeah.
That's what is week one for, if not victory laps over your
premature as hell, but I'm going to take it.
Quick break to tell you about our friends at Underdog Fantasy. Say hello to your new favorite place to play fantasy football for real money, Underdog Fantasy. With Underdog, all you need to do is the fun part, draft. Perfect for me. I don't have time or the inclination to go setting my lineups every single week. So just draft, forget about the injuries, trades, waivers, and setting lineups. Set it, forget it, and wait for the winnings to come in. This year, they've got a $1 million tournament. That's right. Just draft the best team, and you have a shot at $1 million in prizes. Sign up for Underdog today and enter the Best Ball Mania for your chance at $1 million in prizes by going to UnderdogFantasy.com or searching for Underdog Fantasy in your app store. Be sure to enter the code PFF after you make your first deposit. Don't forget to stop by our friends at Monkey Knife Fight. All first-time depositors at Monkey Knife Fight put in at least $20 into their account whilst using the promo code PFF will receive a free PFF Edge annual subscription. That's a $40 value for just $20. You are stealing money, and you'll get the opportunity to turn that $20 into even more money playing daily fantasy and prop games at one of the fastest-growing sports sites in the USA in Monkey Knife Fight. Go to Monkey Knife Fight and deposit your $20 with the promo code PFF today to receive your free PFF Edge annual subscription. Also want to tell you about our friends at MooseFit. MooseFit is a premium online workout program and remote coaching service that provides you with daily workouts based on your goals, the time you have available, and the equipment you have at your disposal. Gyms still closed because of COVID and you don't have any equipment at your home apartment. MooseFit has a bodyweight program that will push you and challenge you. Heading on a beach vacation, looking to tighten things up a bit, MooseFit has a physique program with 15 different pre-made programs. MooseFit is something for everyone. In addition, MooseFit offers completely customized programs that are unique to each member. No two custom programs are the same. It's also great because I've been getting heckled by the MooseFit app to actually complete my workout. Obviously, motivation can be a problem during this downtime. MooseFit stays on your back, make sure you actually complete the regimen as you're supposed to. Purchase your MooseFit membership and a MooseFit coach will reach out to you with a questionnaire. Based on the information you provide in the questionnaire, your MooseFit coach will either assign a pre-made program to you or will create a custom program. All workouts are delivered to members through an easy-to-use mobile and desktop application that allows you and your coach to easily track your progress and make any adjustments to your program that may be necessary. Founded by a former Army Special Operations Captain and former Division I athlete turned professional CrossFit athlete, MooseFit is well-equipped to help provide you with daily workouts that will challenge you and help you reach your health and fitness goals. For PFF listeners, use the code PFF50 and receive 50% off your first month. For more information, check them out on Instagram at MooseFit or on their website, MooseFit.com. All right, biggest week one surprises. Eagles ended up tossing away a 17-point lead and losing to the Washington football team.
That wasn't the biggest surprise, though. The biggest surprise was Dan Orlovsky saying that Carson Wentz was the problem. That was the biggest surprise.
To his credit, Carson Wentz did play like crap.
Yeah. Oh. That one I just kept saying all week. Well, one, I did say that this is going to be a vastly different Washington defense. Ron Rivera, to me, is one of the best defense coordinators in the NFL. like he's going to be able to scheme a defense, and they have talent there to make it work, especially in that front seven. And Chase Young was fantastic. But I think it's time to debate whether Wentz is, like, everyone was saying, hey, just wait till they're fully healthy, wait till they got the receivers, whatever. They looked pretty healthy, and he still didn't have it.
Losing Lane Johnson and the problems they've already had on that offensive line, like, he was under pressure a reasonable amount. That was the thing, right? Heading into this game, I thought it was going to be closer than people were expecting it to be, just because, like, that offensive line going up against that Washington defensive front did have kind of mismatch written all over it. Now, once you got out to the 17-point lead, it was like, well, it doesn't matter right? Like, at that point, you should already have it in the bag, and yet that's when the comeback started. But, like, the ability was there for this defensive front to cause this to be a problematic game for Wentz and the Eagles.
Yeah, this is one I'm not going to overreact to. I still think the Eagles are a very good team. But I will say Carson Wentz, he can't play anything close to that. He's had a top five offensive line every single year of his career. And it's similar to, like, the Dak Prescott conversation of they've had some pretty ideal situations. Dak Prescott loses his right tackle. Wentz probably playing behind the worst offensive line with the injuries that he's ever played behind. If you're not going to be able to get it done when you know you have some liabilities up front, is that the guy I want, you know, at the helm long term? I don't know.
The Washington football team had 31 total pressures as a defense in that game. That's an insane number. Like, most defenses are by the end of the season racking up, like, you know, a couple of hundred, somewhere in the 200s. That's putting you on course.
I'm excited for when Reuben Foster comes back to that defense, because he's a perfect linebacker for what Ron Rivera does. I think they could be, like, they could be winning games with their defense. Everyone's like, oh, they're in the first overall pick conversation. And I was kind of on board with that too, with just what they have offensively, because they have a pretty shit offensive line themselves. But I think that defense is going to be legit this season.
Chase Young looked pretty legit right out of the gate.
Surprise, surprise.
And doing a lot of it against Jason Peters. Like, that to me was the interesting thing. The fact that Chase Young had a big game against, you know, the guys that the Eagles are trotting out on the offensive line is not necessarily a big surprise. But the fact that he got some of that joy against Jason Peters. Now,
38-year-old
and having to kick out to left tackle. And having spent, playing, you know, guard most of his time playing guard. Like, there are some mitigating factors there, but still, like, there's enough, you know, juice left in the tank for Jason Peters. You would expect to still be a problem for Chase Young, and yet I would say he got the better of that.
Yeah, I think Chase Young was better than Nick Bosa in college, so if he is better than Nick Bosa year one, it would not surprise me. And whereas Nick Bosa was the best we've ever seen as a rookie.
Yes, that's the thing, right? Yeah. To put that in perspective, if Chase Young is better than Nick Bosa year one, that would make him A, the best pass rushing rookie we've ever seen, and B, like, a top five pass rusher right out of the gate. Like, that would be nuts.
And that's very possible after what we saw.
And, like, when you consider the guys that are on that list in terms of, like, greatest hitting the ground running immediately, I mean, like, you're talking about Hall of Famers. Like, Von Miller is on that list. Alden Smith is on that list.
Looked good himself.
Right. There's some pretty damn good players on that list. If Chase Young puts himself there, I mean, it doesn't necessarily, you know, if Dwayne Haskins doesn't work out, it might not matter. But that's as good as you can ask for in terms of if you're passing up a quarterback for a surefire thing. Yeah. That's as close as you're going to get to vindicating that.
Hey, I said two guys I've called Hall of Famers coming out in the drafts started doing this. Quentin Nelson, that one looks pretty hot right now. Chase Young, he just was that good. And I think we saw it already. Just got to stay healthy and not Alden Smith himself.
Everybody loves the term, you know, can't miss prospect. But I think those two were, like, legitimate can't miss prospects.
Yeah. There's you feel good. No, when it's on along the offensive or defensive line, you feel good. They're like, you get so many interactions if they're not losing any.
Right.
There's, like, you can tell. And they're freaks athletically.
You basically need to say, if you're going to tell me this guy is not a can't miss prospect, explain to me how he loses.
Yeah.
And there was no way either of those guys lost ever. Like, it just didn't happen.
Yeah.
And the reasons that would be thrown at you are ones that are immediately disproved if you actually watch. Like, Chase Young's how he loses as well. He disappeared
against Wisconsin.
You're right. And it's like, no, come on, look, watch the tape. And then he didn't. Like,
that was the most I've ever seen anyone game plan for.
Exactly. Like, that's just not a valid reason. That's a reason you throw at somebody if you haven't actually watched what happened to Chase Young in that game.
Zero sacks.
Right.
Zero sacks then.
All right. Let's move out west. NFC West, Jimmy Garoppolo, the 49ers, upset by the Arizona Cardinals. Kyler Murray, year Called two. It. That didn't look good for Jimmy G.
And so this one might have been the least encouraging performance of any quarterback this week, like, because it was just erratic. And it wasn't – he wasn't making bad decisions with the football, which has kind of been his MO. Like, he's made bad decisions with the football in the past. He didn't have a single turnover where they play, and he had a 52.5 grade. That's difficult to do.
Yeah.
To not throw a disastrous decision, make a disastrous decision with the football in our grading system and still earn a very low grade means – you were just off on a lot of throws. And he was. Even the last play to end it, like, it could have been caught, but it was way late and way behind the wide receiver. He just was none of it. None of it was good. Like, there was nothing really exciting for him. Exciting if I'm a 49ers fan about that performance whatsoever. It was no step forward. It was maybe a step backwards from what we've seen from him.
Yeah. The hospital pass he threw to George Kittle on what was, you know, what should be like a routine quick pass to the outside. It was,
that was Hackenberg-esque.
It was yards off. Like, Kittle had to full leap and extend to bring that in, which obviously just exposes you to the kind of hit. Which obviously just exposes you to the kind of hit that he took, which is how you get people hurt.
Dude, like, so lucky he didn't get hurt. That was, his knees were just like landing at the same time he's getting hit. The fact that he survived that is
the last time I saw a quarterback hang his receiver out to dry as badly as that. I think was, you remember when Andrew Luck tore Reggie Wayne's ACL, but like, it was a crossing route and he put it so badly, like, behind and underneath him that he basically popped his ACL trying to adjust the catch.
Okay, now I remember. Yeah, like, trying to go back.
Right,
just running.
He was like running across the field, had to like stop, come back, and down, and it just like twisted his own knee.
He didn't get hit. He just
It was just such a bad miss by the quarterback that it forced your receiver to do something that got him hurt.
Yeah,
that was like, that's as bad as this was, and he was really lucky that Kittle wasn't badly hurt and came
inexcusably
back.
Off target.
Right,
Jimmy G. Like, that's not. And it's not, oh, we didn't have a preseason, the offense is a little out of sync. Just missed a ton of fucking throws.
This is the weird thing. Garoppolo's kind of an enigmatic quarterback because I think a lot of people want to put him in this game-managing bucket because of Shanahan's offense, right? Like, because the offense schemes so many things and it's very run-heavy and the quarterback is not – he doesn't have to do what Aaron Rodgers does, right? People – want to say, well, he's just this game, but he doesn't play like that. Like, he targets the middle of the field. He's the opposite of Rodgers in terms of he targets the middle of the field relentlessly.
Yeah,
he actually puts the ball in harm's way a lot for a guy that doesn't throw that much compared to the other quarterbacks. And we've seen games where he has had to be way more expansive and, you know, throw the ball a ton to live with teams in a high scoring game. If you're going to be like, you can't live in that role and be as off as he was in terms of just basic accuracy and putting the ball where it needs to go. Like, you need to be pinpoint accurate to run that sort of efficient role.
Yeah, he's not the quarterback. Like, Nick Mullins was a little better, like, for that offense.
Right.
Now, obviously, like, type of quarterback, I'm saying. Like, the way he played in that offense. I still think Jimmy G can, you know, get it humming at a high level when he is on. But, like, I do agree that that's not – if you're going to pick the type of guy I wanted back there, I don't want the guy who might lose me games with his arm like Jimmy G could.
Right. The other thing that came out of this game to me is that Kyle Shanahan is, like, a mastermind.
Yeah, targeting.
Isaiah Simmons comes in the NFL. His big calling card is, like, I'm the perfect matchup weapon on defense. Mm-hmm. I will take away the players that you use on offense to generate matchup problems. And Kyle Shanahan was like, oh, really? Just paints a big bullseye on him and just goes after him.
Ready.
And the funny thing is, like, he didn't even play that much. Like,
yeah.
Like, I don't know if it was because he was getting lit up like a Christmas
tree. Well, he wasn't starting. Like,
right.
He was, yeah.
But he played, like, less than 20 snaps, and yet Shanahan eviscerated him on multiple occasions as, like, this is the player that is going to lead to the big play.
Yeah, and that was kind of – everyone said he never played linebacker at Clemson. He was a safety. He was not having to cover a running back out of the backfield much. Like he did it some, but angle route, he just didn't know how to. Like he thought it was going
to
be.
It never occurred
to him
that there was a chance that he could like reverse course and come back inside. He was just heading out to cover him in the flat.
Yeah, that was uninspiring, to say the least. But by all accounts, he had not had a good camp, so why he wasn't. If your eighth overall pick's not starting, that was worrisome to begin with. But I mean, rookie linebacker, brand new position. I'm not going to overreact to that. The one thing I was a little encouraged by for the Cardinals offensively is Kyler Murray using the legs. I said it on last week's pod. They got to get him more involved. Let him go. Like let him run. That is a weapon that they really didn't utilize enough last year. It's something like 50 design runs all year, just not a lot. I think the more you can do that, he had 5 design runs, 13 total carries, almost 100 yards. I think the more you do that with Kyler Murray, the better off you'll be as an offense.
Right, and late in the game, that run he had was pretty absurd. Yeah. I was started thinking yesterday, the word, you know, lumbering for Rob Gronkowski, I think is a good mesh. Kyler Murray is made for the word scamper.
Scampers.
Nobody scampers like Kyler Murray.
Yeah.
So he's scampering. Gronkowski is lumbering. There's a couple of running backs. They've sort of died out more, but there's a few running backs for whom rumbling is the best possible analogy.
Yeah. Brandon Jacobs is
a Brandon Jacobs is a good rumbling running back. Yeah. I agree. And the other thing that was really good is this Nuke Hopkins thing worked right away. Like,
oh, who could have seen that coming?
Right. It's not like a surprise. Yeah. He clearly was, you know, a major thing that was missing from this offense. That look, Larry Fitzgerald was forced into being the number one last season, and Larry Fitzgerald's days of being a number one receiver are long gone. Like when you're feeding him bubble screens to try and get him the ball, it's like that's just bad. Now you get DeAndre Hopkins in there, you get a legit number one, you get a guy that, you know, his sort of calling card may be that contested catch stuff, but he understands what he's doing. Like he can get open, particularly when you're running this sort of spread style offense, right? And you're generating more space just from the the system, alignment. Just from the alignment of the route concepts. Like you're getting him more open than he would have been in Houston. Like he's making a huge difference.
Yeah, 16 targets on the day, 14 catches for 151. That was what they were missing. They had no one who could win a route when they needed someone to win a route.
They
were starting Keyshawn Johnson.
They basically had the Patriots receiving core, except they were running a spread offense.
Him to win one-on-ones all the time.
It was a disaster. Like, for as much as, you know, that was the reason Tom Brady looked like crap last year. Like, Kyler Murray didn't really look like crap last year, and yet he was probably dealing with about the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that shouldn't be understated. Like, that was a major problem for the Cardinals a year ago. They fixed that in a heartbeat with one of the best trades that's ever gone down from their perspective. And the DeAndre Hopkins thing worked immediately.
Mm-hmm. Murray wasn't himself great, but I do think this offense with DeAndre Hopkins, I think can be pretty damn good.
And the thing is he doesn't necessarily need to be great. You know what I mean? Like that's the exciting thing about this team is you've given him so much more help this offseason, right? You get Nuke Hopkins in year two of Kingsbury's offense. Like, year one to me was encouraging, not necessarily for what it brought, but for the developments that it made throughout the year. You know, like immediately understanding that this 10 personnel thing is not going to function at the NFL level. Let's junk that. Let's, you know, pivot to more 3 wide receiver sets, more 2 tight end sets. Let's move towards an NFL style offense while still sort of keeping some, you know, the basic fundamentals of this system. That, I think, was really encouraging because it shows the guy will adapt and understand how to attack NFL defenses. Year two of that with a number one wide receiver, with the dangerous parts of Kyler Murray, right? He's got the incredible arm that can make all the plays. He's got that athleticism that can make big plays on the ground. Like, he doesn't need to turn into the most efficient passer in the world right off the gate in year two for them to be really damn good.
And I think their defense is going to be better, even if Isaiah Simmons isn't an impact player whatsoever. Just getting some young guys in secondary, Byron Murphy, Jalen Thompson in year two. Murphy had obviously the game-winning pass breakup. I think just that those improvements will help as well.
How good do you think the Cardinals can be this year?
Ooh, now that's a good question. The West, all of a sudden, after 1 week, everyone, you know, pretty much was universally 49ers, I think, the pick heading in.
Can I take a victory lap? I picked the Seahawks.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's what I was going to say.
I spent the last week taking crap for it because everyone was like, what are you doing picking Seattle for this division?
To be fair, they played Atlanta.
It's victory lap, Mike. Don't undermine it.
But I do think it's kind of went from 49ers to now it's just, it seems wide open, far more wide open than it did heading into the year. I always thought Cardinals were a 9-7, 10-6 team this year. I think that's still where they end up. But I think that could be good enough to, I mean, easily make a wild card. And if not, you know, one or two more games, 11-5 could be the West.
That's the really interesting thing is that now we're in a three wild card world. Like yeah. Those teams where it's like,
three wild card world.
You know, they might not be good enough to really make noise.
That's 7-9 team.
Yeah, like those are
backs in.
Teams like the Cardinals have a realistic goal now of third wild card spot. And the other, I mean, I was sort of saying all the way through the offseason, this team, like it could be better than people are expecting it to be this year. Like they may not be good enough to challenge if that's ever going to happen, but this, like they could make a postseason.
I kept saying, get Kyler Murray involved in that run game. He's just too dynamic. Like he's the closest thing to Lamar Jackson at the running, at quarterback running with the football. He's pretty damn close.
Did you like, forget Taysom Hill?
Okay. Besides Taysom Hill. But no, he really is. And I think not utilizing him as much. Obviously, year one, it wasn't going to be good. Like, you're not going to throw him to the wolves. He did get hurt later on in the season. But utilizing him more and more in that is just a tried and true method to success offensively in the NFL.
All right, let's cover one more thing quickly before we wrap it up with some week one overreactions, whether we're buying or selling them. I'm going to pivot back to the one of the other biggest upsets of week one. Indianapolis Colts and the Jacksonville Minshews.
Colts didn't punt. what the fuck was that? Was such a weird game. What are they like going on the road and losing that game is a bad start to the Colts. And Phillip really Rivers, we talked about Breeze looking cooked. That was ugly.
Yeah.
Like that was.
Well, the thing is, he also like he dropped some dimes in there as well. It was just like Rivers is weird because that shot putt delivery thing has never looked right.
Yeah.
Right. So when the arm does inevitably start to wane in his later years, it somehow looks 10 times worse because it already looked bad. Like it got to where it was supposed to go, but it just looked ugly when it isn't getting to where it's supposed to go. And it looks ugly as well. It looks like it's a disaster. Yeah.
The picks though were the concerning thing because everyone, I don't want to say everyone, but like people were trying to chalk up last year to, the offensive line and the Chargers. Once he has the time now behind a good offensive line, you're not going to see those bad decisions. To see those out the gate, and now he's another guy adjusting to a new offense so many years, and now he's had a bunch of different offense coordinators there with the Chargers, but so you thought maybe his adjustment might be a little easier, but man, that one pick, the out route, was awful.
Yeah.
Like just completely misreading coverage. I do worry that you're just going to see more picks, and this is another team where if you were to build, you want a game manager with how good that offensive line is, how good that running game should be. You don't want a guy throwing the game away. And gotta say it, Phillip Rivers threw that game away.
That's the big concern to me is that that was what I was kind of pitching through this offseason, right? Is that he's reached the age now where all those quarterbacks, I think, are kind of declining, right? Mm-hmm. To varying degrees. They're not the players they used to be, right? And are probably not going to get back to that point at any stage. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that changes is that you lose the ability to deal with pressure in the way you used to, right? Because I think one of the ways a declining arm manifests itself is not when you're set and you can everything you can wind up mechanically, the way you're supposed to. It's when you're off platform, you have to do it all arm, you have to do it from a weird stance. That's where you don't have just the zip that you used to and you can't make those throws. And obviously that comes up more if your offensive line is garbage because the pocket's muddy, you don't have the platform to step up, you can't make the plays. So for Phillip Rivers, it's like, okay, he's had seasons in the past where he's dealt with a terrible offensive line and still played really well, but he probably can't do that anymore. So you move him to the Colts where you have a great offensive line. You should, in theory, mitigate a lot of that.
Yeah.
The fact that that didn't happen is, I think, a real worry for them.
He was under pressure on 6 of 47 dropbacks.
Right.
Like,
but still.
As clean as it can be.
Yeah.
As good a situation as you can have from an offensive line. And for him not to, like, for him to that, throw those picks and just, you know, not be able to lead him back was unencouraging to say the least.
Yes. That being said, his grade wasn't actually that horrendous.
No.
The two other two interesting things from this game are on the other team. CJ Henderson, great game. And Gardner Minshew might be tank proof. You can't, if your plan is we're going to dismantle this roster, get a bunch of talent for like the future,
yeah,
and then we'll suck this year and get Trevor Lawrence, you're not getting it with Minshew at quarterback. He's not going to let it happen.
That, I mean, he was classic vintage Minshew. It just was. And that's the worrisome thing. If you're the Jaguars, you're like, oh shit, maybe we're throwing out too good of a quarterback right now. Or maybe,
yeah,
maybe Minshew is our guy in the future, which I still,
that's the thing. I think he's that perfect, like, hell, the perfect quarterback purgatory of, he's too good.
Yeah.
You cannot tank with him at quarterback, but he's not good enough to, like,
yeah,
you need a really good team around him if you're going to win a Super Bowl.
Yes, I completely agree.
So you're kind of stuck. Like, you can't, like, what do they do? Because if that was the plan, right? If their genuine overall strategy is tank for the number one overall pick and get Trevor Lawrence, you're not getting that with Minshew a quarterback, which means you need to do one of two things. You need to either bench Minshew a quarterback, or you need to, like, start preparing for the trade you're going to need to make to get to number one.
I was going to say, I feel like we could look back at this one and be like one of the ultimate week one blips and be like, oh, okay, yeah, the Jaguars actually were a bad team.
I mean, they're going to be bad, but they're not, like, you're not going to be number one overall pick with Minshew at quarterback.
Who is then? Is, I guess,
the,
like,
Jets.
Because, okay, yeah, the Jets are going to be awful. But they also, but the Jets also played a very good defense. It's one of those things where the competition they played, I thought the Redskins were going to be in competition for number one pick. They played a real team and
the
won.
Football team, Michael.
The Jets
the
played.
Football team.
Oh, gosh, I keep saying it. I thought the football team was going to be number one pick. They played a real team and actually won. The Jets played a real team, looked like ass, but it was a real defense,
yeah,
that they looked,
that's
like
true,
ass,
that's
against.
Fair.
You know, maybe when they go up against the Dolphins something, they might not. The Dolphins, yeah, still another team that could be in the number,
right,
one overall pick conversation. But I still do think the Jags just don't have it defensively and kind of just, I mean, they didn't really stop the Colts. They had a couple picks.
Yeah.
Like, the Colts stopped themselves to a degree.
I mean, I'm not saying he's going to be, like, the team's going to be good, but I Minshew's going to win you 3-4 games,
yeah,
this year that they should.
I see, yeah.
And that's going to take you out of the number one overall pick, at which point you either need to figure out how you're going to trade back into it.
How, oh, yeah, they just dismantle this roster into, if they get like the 5th overall pick and,
right,
don't even,
I mean,
they aren't even in position to draft Lance, Fields, or Lawrence, I would be so mad.
They could easily do what the Dolphins did last year, right?
Yeah.
And, like, win a couple of games they shouldn't and end up picking 5th. Now, the Dolphins got lucky and, you know, had the quarterback
did,
anyway,
yeah,
but, like, Jacksonville might not get that luxury. Like, they could end up there and actually have to make a trade happen to get the quarterback they desperately need. Otherwise, you just go, well, okay, I guess Minshew's the guy for the next 5 years.
Yeah, and this QB class, a trade's not going to be cheap.
Right, so that would be concerning. And can you imagine what a terrible message, like, benching Minshew would send? Like, it's literally just saying we're giving up. Like, that would be the strongest statement any team has ever made, that we are literally
tanking.
Who
even is their backup? Is it Chad Henne?
I don't even know. That's not
who
a good sign.
Oh, Mike Glennon.
Oh, no.
So they would definitely get the number one overall pick if they bench Minshew.
I mean, that would be the strongest statement that anybody has ever made, that, like, this is just outright tanking.
Yeah, that would, the NFL might step in.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that would, yeah, be like, okay, for whatever the discussion has been in the past about whether a team is tanked or not, this is just, this is, it's happening, yeah, now. Oh, that would be rough. All right, overreactions to week one.
Let's do it.
Are we buying or are we selling these? The easiest one to start with is, Baker Mayfield is done. He is not the future for Cleveland.
Man. I can't. I'm selling. You can't play as well as he did as a rookie and not, like, no one peaks as a rookie. There's he's going to turn around. Another team, like, you played a buzzsaw. You played the Ravens.
Yes.
On the road. Now, road doesn't really matter as much, but you played,
right,
the Ravens. A good secondary still, even without Earl Thomas. And Odell Beckham turned into Odell Beckham once again. I don't know what the hell's, like, Odell Beckham, I had an ex-girlfriend once who just, like, drama followed her. She would always be, like, would always say she was, like,
right,
above it. And just, like, and it's not me. It's, like, drama just, like, followed.
Yeah,
at some,
yeah,
point, it's,
right,
you.
If,
like,
the
at
reaction
some point,
you have with every other human,
exactly,
is the same, you're probably the
at some point,
denominator.
It is you. And I think that's where we're at with Odell Beckham, where it's, like, he can say he's above whatever, all this, like, off-field drama that goes on with him.
Right.
At some point, if it's been there every single stop of your career, I think at some point it's you. And then for him to drop balls, like, for him to not play well again is,
that's the thing,
is the thing where it's just like, what's going on there?
That's the thing with Odell, right? If he was balling out and, like, playing like the guy that burst,
yeah,
onto the scene,
and you had
Giants,
Antonio Brown drama around you,
right, okay, we can work with that, right? There's something we can live with that. But like, if you're going to be, particularly like when your calling card is like you spend pregame warmups just plucking the ball out of the air one-handed, like it's nothing, you know,
then
like
you drop balls.
Right. You cannot drop passes. Look, if Larry Fitzgerald can haul in every pass sent his way for like 25 years, you can catch the passes that are thrown your way.
And I've not seen one pregame Larry Fitzgerald highlight, I'll just say.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, okay, Larry's got some big hands, but he doesn't have like Odell Beckham freaky plucking it out of the sky without even thinking about it, catching ability. Like that's your problem. Like that is a thing that you should be fixing and you're not. Like you can't ignore all the off-field concerns if you're not going to be the guy that you were supposed to be when we traded for you. So this is getting harder though, this whole like Baker thing. I agree. I'm still with you in terms of, look, the thing we were saying all offseason is we've got like 5 years of data on Baker and four of them have been really good.
Yeah.
Right. One terrible, or not even terrible. He was bad last year, but not abysmal. Mm-hmm. Like the reports of his demise were kind of talked up a little bit last year. Like he wasn't atrocious. Mm-hmm. It was just a huge step back from what we saw as a rookie. So it's concerning, right? But, and the other thing is the Ravens are maybe the worst team in the NFL to try and like fix that against, right? They're going to throw weird things at you.
Yeah.
Like the first interception, I think, you're not expecting to see 6'9" Calais Campbell from the interior dropping into the throwing lane and getting a big mitten away. Like that falls under the category of stuff you are not expecting to see when you drop back, look up and find, you know, that's not supposed to be there. So the Ravens are like the worst team possible to try and like get your head in the right space and be comfortable with what you're seeing. On the other hand, like all of the things that went wrong last year are still problems. The fact that nothing appears to have changed is massively concerning. So, like I could accept a few sort of rookie mistake looking throws because of the Ravens defense, but like the fact that everything looked like last year, like Stefanski coming in, the new offense, play to his strengths, Odell, you know, nothing. It's all the same. Like at which point now we've got some problems.
Yeah, like, just like it's like he misses a throw, then the timing's wrong, then Odell Beckham drops a pass, and it's just like the same, like mistakes just keep happening.
Everything's broken. Yeah. And like last year it was okay, everything was broken, so obviously Freddie Kitchens is the problem. Let's get rid of him and we're back, right? But no, everything is still broken. And at some point, the other thing I've never quite understood with Mayfield is where the hell his accuracy went.
Yeah, he's been off. Like
for like a year and a half now.
This game, so many misses, just in terms of
And that was the thing. Like even in college, it was always a small sample size, but even on the plays where everything broke down and went to hell and it was tight windows and all these kinds of things, his accuracy was still absurdly good. Like it was almost Drew Brees levels of accuracy. He was nuts. That is gone at the NFL level. He isn't putting the ball where it's supposed to be anymore.
Well, even rookie year he was accurate.
Right.
Like it was not, something's off still. But again, it's the Ravens, so that's why I'm not going to overreact. But a few more games of this, and I can get on board.
Oh, God. I honestly don't know whether I'm buying this one or not. I'm terrified now of the Baker Mayfield thing. I tweeted yesterday, right now he's broken. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that there are that many examples of quarterbacks that have been broken and put back together again. Like, can you think of that many? Because I can think of a few where the quarterback has been broken and that guy's gone.
And then like,
never see him. You never see good version of that guy again.
Gosh, that's a good question.
I don't know if there have been many that have been put back together and you see the best play come back.
I mean, like Mike Vick, whatever. When does that count? Went to jail.
Okay. All right. If that's like our one.
Alex Smith.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That might be fair.
He was definitely not right in San Francisco.
Right. Yeah, that's true.
For a period.
That did require going to an Andy Reid offense.
Yeah. Roman, then Reid. Yeah. Good OC helps.
I mean, I'm just, it's time to get really concerned. Mm-hmm. Wherever you were last year in terms of writing that off, like massive alarms. All right. Henry Ruggs.
Thursday night, though. Pretty good game.
Yes.
Bengals.
Henry Ruggs has fixed Derek Carr. And by that, I mean the problem with Derek Carr was like the complete, not even inability, the complete refusal to throw the ball deep down the field. Lowest average at the target in the NFL the last 2 years. Just would not throw deep since that 2016 season. He was yesterday.
I will say the Panthers secondary fixed Derek Carr. I mean, the Panthers secondary is rough. They're starting rookies. Not a lot to like about that. That to me was the bigger thing. We have a lot of data on Derek Carr right now that says he is about as conservative as it gets. That I'm going to need a little more than one game.
He didn't always used to be, though. That's the thing. Like, if it was, if he was Teddy,
to some degree,
if he was Teddy Bridgewater and he just like, he'd never thrown it deep. Like, at no point in his career had he ever shown the ability or inclination to do that.
Yeah.
Fair enough. But 2016 Derek Carr, he would take some chances. He'd throw downfield. He'd be aggressive. And then that guy disappeared.
Yeah.
Then
his ankle.
Yeah.
It's torched him.
But I mean, that's the theory, right? If you're going to coax a guy into doing that, you find him a freaking speedster who's going
to
get
over. Like the Tyreek Hill for Alex Smith.
Right. And then the other thing that was encouraging is they didn't all go to Ruggs. Like, there was a deep shot that he hit to an absolute dime to Nelson Agholor. Like, Aguilar's got some speed, but he's not the guy that you look up and it's one-on-one on the outside. You're going, oh, we're going to Agholor. Like, the fact that he,
for damn sure.
Yeah, the fact that he took that shot was pretty encouraging as well.
So you're buying that
reaction. Yeah, okay, I'm buying this.
I'm selling.
You're selling, all right.
But it was encouraging.
Yes. We covered this briefly, but the Jags will play their way out of the quarterback class.
I still say no. I'm selling all these overreactions, but I think it turns around that they don't have enough on that roster.
I'm definitely buying this one. Okay. Minshew is completely tank-proof. You cannot tank with Minshew as your quarterback. He's going to win you too many games.
So 6-10, you think? 5-11?
Yeah, that's something like that. Okay. 5-11 makes sense. 5-11, and I'm banking on the idea that takes you out of
Two teams will be like 3-13
right.
or 4-12.
It takes you far enough out of those top QBs that you're going to need help to get them. All right, Brady's washed. It's done. 2014 article has finally come true.
This one I actually might be buying.
No.
I think there's just, you're not going to get elite level play from him anymore. Now, he had a bad situation in New England. I just don't think that, he's 43 years old. And it's not just the arm. It's not the only reason. There's just like other things you can't do physically. Stuff starts to go at that age to where I don't think he's completely washed, but I don't think you're going to see top 10 quarterback plays here.
Yeah, he might have passed the point where he's capable of dominating in a marginal situation. Like, obviously, Brady in the past has had seasons where he's elevated everybody around him and he's looked phenomenal despite not everybody around him being great. Even in a decent situation, he might not be capable of doing that anymore. He might actually need that optimal situation to play like a top five quarterback.
Yeah.
That, I think, is probably fair. I don't know. The big concern to me is not... I think Brady can still play like a top quarterback if things are good around him. My concern is the mesh between Brady and that offense. We talked about that before. Mm-hmm. Unless that syncs up, I think you're going to have some issues. Like, that Bruce Arians offense is capable of extracting some insane play out of quarterbacks, but it's kind of a high wire act. Like, the seasons that it gets out of them, I'm not entirely sure how it gets them out of them. But like, it's almost like they shouldn't be possible. Like, the things that Carson Palmer did in 2015 are not supposed to happen. Like, you
that
shouldn't
was a
be
wild season.
Yeah, you should not be that efficient at that intermediate and deep level the way he was. And yet he's kind of got this track record of getting that out of quarterbacks. But I don't know that Brady has that to give anymore. So that would be my concern. Like, I think if you go back to an offense that suits him better stylistically, I think he can still play at that level. But if you're trying to get that 2015 Carson Palmer season out of him, I don't think that's there anymore.
Okay, interesting.
So I don't know what that is in terms of buying or
not
selling.
Not washed. I guess that wouldn't be washed.
Okay, not washed then. All right, Jamal Adams makes the Seahawks NFC West favorites. He was really good yesterday.
Yeah, and Russell Wilson was very good. Now, Falcon secondary, not very good. So kind of this one, I don't know which way to go on this one, because I don't think they're favorites, but I do think it's kind of just a three-horse race now in the West.
Okay.
Like, I did not like what I saw from the 49ers. And I kind of said it before, the 49ers, there wasn't like a really area on the roster. They got better from last season. And if you didn't get better somewhere, now maybe they'll be healthier at tackle all season because they had some injuries. But if you're not getting better in the NFL, usually like an injury strikes somewhere more important, like it has at wide receiver for them. And like usually you get worse if you didn't get better on paper. So I'm a little worried about the 49ers at this point. I'm gonna sell though. I still think it probably is their division to lose. I don't think they're the favorites, but I was encouraged by what I saw.
He did
change that defense.
Yes,
bring the table.
So I think I'm buying, but I'm not quite sold on the premise. Okay. I think the Seahawks are the favorites now for that division, but I don't know that it's Jamal Adams that made that happen.
Didn't push him over the edge.
Like I think that he definitely changed that defense and makes that more impactful and scary for teams to have to deal with. Mm-hmm. But like the biggest thing coming out of that game is that the Seahawks were prepared to let Russell Wilson
cook.
Be the thing. Yeah, let Russell Wilson be the thing that the offense hinged on and throw the ball and didn't have to run the ball all day to make the point. Like if they're prepared to do that all season long, they have by far the best quarterback in the division.
Yeah.
They like that makes them the favorites. The fact that they have Russ and they're prepared to let him off the leash.
Yeah, only 17 rushing attempts outside of Russell.
Right.
They gave it to him. They had 35 passing attempts. That's not the Seahawks we saw last.
Exactly.
Season.
So that to me is what makes them favorites, not okay. Like Jamal Adams helps,
fair.
But that's not like why they are. All right, Cowboys, they're not going to make the leap that everyone predicted.
This one's interesting because depending on how long Lyle Collins is out, like that offensive line, it's kind of whenever Dak has had, you know, when Tyron Smith missed a good period of time, was it 2 years ago, when he's had that offensive line that hasn't been dominant,
yeah,
it's gone in the tank and gone in the tank kind of quickly for that offense. So if the offensive line really is going to be an issue, and it was an issue on Sunday night, Aaron Donald just ate them up. I don't think they make a leap at all if the offensive line does take a step back.
I think Dak Prescott is like the perfect quarterback that goes as far as his environment is. Like, and I honestly, he might
over the course of his
career. Right. And he might be as susceptible to that as any quarterback in the NFL in terms of like, if you give him a great supporting cast, I honestly think he could look like an MVP candidate. Like if you gave him an all-pro offensive line, a group of wide receivers that are great, the ones he has at the moment, to be honest, a great running game, great defense, I honestly think Dak Prescott would be MVP. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people will say, well, any quarterback. I don't think any quarterback. Like Andy Dalton would not look like an MVP if you gave him those.
2015.
Right, if you gave him those, that environment. And there's a lot of other quarterbacks that wouldn't either. They just don't have that in them. But if the situation goes to hell and suddenly the offensive line falls to pieces and you don't have – you know, receivers, or you don't have defense, whatever. Like if the situation erodes, I think Dak collapses more than most quarterbacks. Like I think he looks worse with crappy supporting cast than a lot of quarterbacks would. So basically if the theory was Dak Prescott would look great, maybe an MVP candidate, the Cowboys take a giant leap forward because the situation around him is so good, maybe the best he's ever had. And when the situation is great, Dak looks good. The situation might not be as good as we thought it was, particularly on that offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm probably buying this one. Maybe the situation is not good enough for them to take as big a leap as we expected them to.
I think I'm buying this one too. And he was so under pressure a lot. Yeah, 19 of his 45 dropbacks. That 42% of your snaps is a lot to be under pressure. But I don't think that's going to be an outlier occurrence. Like, we've talked about how offensive line is kind of a weak link proposition where it's like all it takes is one guy to lose along your offensive line, and that's it on a pass protection play, and that's not going to be a good that's a pressure. You're not going to have a clean pocket then. So it doesn't matter that Zach Martin and Tyron Smith may not allow any pressures in a game. If your other guys are, if Terrence Steele's at right tackle, you're going to have a problem every single time you drop back to pass. So I do think that if that's what their offensive line is going to look like for a period of time, we're not going to see any sort of lead.
I mean, they desperately need Lyle Collins back quickly. Because
like, and Steele's going up against Leonard Floyd. That's about as favorable a matchup as you can draw as a tackle.
That's the thing. It's like, okay, Leonard Floyd's got some athletic skills, but he's proven pretty consistently that he's not actually that impressive a pass rusher at the NFL level. If you can't live with that, you're going to have some issues. Like, so that would give them... If Terrence Steele is out there for any period of time, that gives them at least two significant weak links on the offensive line. Maybe three if Joe Looney struggles against some of the better interior guys in the NFL. Like, there's basically just Zach Martin and Tyron Smith you don't have to worry about.
Yeah.
And at some point, you probably have to worry about the fact that Tyron Smith's going to get hurt. And whether he misses time or not, he's not going to be like vintage Tyron Smith. You know what I mean? So that suddenly, like, the offensive line goes from being like one of the best in the NFL every single year to being actually, you know what, there's some issues here.
Yes. And I mean, Cam Irving, the fact that he couldn't even win the starting job over Terrence Steele's.
And then got hurt. Hilarious. Yeah. On special teams. Like they had to cart him off.
Jeez, yeah. I didn't see that. Okay, I shouldn't laugh.
Yeah, he got rolled up on a special teams play, got x-rayed and carted off. So at one point, I think they were, I mean, that was part of the issue is that they, I think they ran out of offensive linemen. I don't know if they had any backups left. So even if they wanted to make the switch for Steele, they couldn't. So not only is like the starting five a problem, the depth is a concern as well.
Yeah, so I think definitely then buying that.
All right, so we're both buying that one. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's week one in the books, Mike. Well, week one in the books pending Monday Night Football doubleheader. Those will be fun. I'm intrigued to see what these games look like as well.
Yeah.
We made it. We got back.
I was so excited. I woke up at 5 a.m. this morning. I was so hyped. I was just like, let's go.
All right, so that's our week one review podcast in the books. We'll be back on, I think Thursdays is when we're recording the preview ones. We're going to start diving into some interviews this season. We're going to get some guests on as well. So we'll change up the preview podcast a little bit. I don't know if we have one in the books yet because we're going to wait for Mr. Palazzolo to be back in the building.
Yeah. When's he getting tested?
I don't know, actually. I don't know when he's...
Is he just going to keep riding it out? Just be like, hey... I'll just keep working from home. I don't need to get tested.
Maybe he enjoys not having to get up early in the morning, crawl into the office for his podcast. We'll see. Hopefully at some point, Palazzolo will be back. We'll get ourselves our interview guests. We've got some good ones lined up, but we're holding off until we're all in the office. We can actually get them dialed in on the screen. So anyway, that's it. Thank you for listening. This has been Mike Renner, Sam Monson for the PFF NFL podcast. See you later in the week.